Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
There is something going on in our country right now that is breaking my heart. And it's being documented. It's being shown live on news stations across the country, including CNN, where I saw it. Sheriff's deputies are going to the homes of people who have lost their jobs because of COVID, who are renting apartments and townhomes and houses, who can no longer afford to pay the monthly expense, who have gotten behind, and they're being evicted. Cities and states and counties are not doing enough to stop it. And there was a man on CNN, bless his heart, he lost his job because of COVID. His wife and small children, I'm talking Pampa and Pacifier age, were put out of their home because they couldn't pay their rent. And you saw the children crying, and you saw that woman getting her stuff, and you saw that man trying to explain himself, but the police were, you know, powerless to do anything except carry out orders. And he was trying to get as much as he could to get out of there before they locked the doors, leaving him and his family homeless. People saw that. And those of us who could opened up our wallets and our hearts. $30,000 was raised to help that family. And I saw Houston Texan Deshaun Watson tweeting out that he wanted to find them because he had something special he wanted to give them. And that is such a blessing for that family. But there are tens of thousands of others who are scrambling right now, looking for a place to stay without a job, without income, without opportunity, without school, without a church. Trying to figure out not what they're going to eat, but where they're going to lay their heads, where they're going to tuck in their children. Think about that. You got to wake up and figure out where you're going to park your car, where it's safe for you and your children to sleep. What y'all going to eat? How they going to do their schoolwork? Evictions are happening. And folks are just heartless right now. So when I saw the story by Abigail Hibbings in The Lily, she called it an eviction apocalypse. Eviction apocalypse. That just messed me up right there. The title of the article is "An Eviction Apocalypse is Coming." Get this, second line, Black women will bear the brunt. African-American women are going to bear the brunt of these evictions. So I had to invite Abigail to join the Shaletta Show to talk to me about this article. Thank you so much, Abigail, for being with me this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for discussing this issue. I really appreciate it as well.
Now, how did you come to do this story? What preceded it?
I think I have been concerned for quite a while at how little coverage the eviction crisis gets in the United States. It's really important to remember that as much as this crisis has escalated, this has long been an issue in America. In 2016, well before the pandemic, there were 4 evictions every minute in the United States. And obviously, since the pandemic started, that issue has escalated dramatically. without the current eviction moratorium, which many people would argue is really just kicking the can down the road, 40 million American families are at risk of, would be at risk of eviction by the end of the year. You know, so these numbers are really astronomical. And as you mentioned in the introduction, what particularly drew me to this story is that these evictions, like many things in the United States, are not happening equally. Evictions are a civil rights issue. They're experienced disproportionately by Black Americans, and they're experienced disproportionately by Black women, as you said. And they're not always covered that way when they are covered.
Now, the one thing that struck me in the article is you say evictions are a civil rights issue. How so?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that has been really difficult about naming this as a civil rights issue is that it's very difficult to get information about evictions in the United States. Eviction courts don't collect demographic information. So it wasn't really until recently that some incredible researchers, including Matthew Desmond, who is a sociologist at the Eviction Lab at Princeton University, started collecting demographic information and really started documenting the fact that women experience evictions disproportionately and Black people experience evictions disproportionately. In 17 states across the country, Black women are evicted at twice the rate of white renters. And then when you look at it at a city-by-city level, those numbers in certain cities, those numbers get even higher. In Baltimore, Black women are evicted at 3.9 times the rate of white men. And in Milwaukee, while Black women make up less than 10% of the population, they constitute 30% of evictions.
You know, I remember as a child, I had a very dear friend, and she was always moving. She and her mother would go from one apartment to another apartment, and it would always be in the middle of the night. And it got so prevalent that they would call them, they had a word for it, they would call them night moves. Because these Black women who were working hard, you know, cleaning up office buildings, who had a high school degree but couldn't get an opportunity to do more, just didn't have enough money to raise their families and pay these large sums of rent that they want in a lot of these major metropolitan areas. And so before they got a chance to throw them out, they knew they had to collect their things and their children. So they would move in the middle of the night. That's no way to live, Abigail.
No, it's true. And you see a lot of people who are experiencing serial evictions, which is sounds like what your friend was experiencing, where they're being evicted over and over again. And it's actually sometimes referred to as the Scarlet E. Because once you have an eviction on your record, it becomes very hard, if not close to impossible, to find housing in the future. Because landlords are, you know, there's a lot of collusion between landlords and law enforcement. And landlords are able to scan court records and determine if you've ever experienced an eviction before, which means you will very likely be rejected from most of your future housing applications. So it's not only the initial eviction that people experience, it's then, you know, them they're repeatedly relegated to what is often substandard housing in unsafe neighborhoods and under-resourced neighborhoods, because those are the only places where landlords will allow them to rent again after they've experienced an eviction. So this can, you know, I mean, one eviction can trigger a lifetime of housing instability.
And housing segregation. That's one of the things that you bring up in your article. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, housing segregation is obviously something that has existed in the since the beginning of the United States. You know, particularly the history of redlining in the United States. You know, the differential credit that was offered to Black and white families. That relegated Black families to poor neighborhoods, you know, and this is something that happened decades and decades and decades ago. But those neighborhoods map pretty closely onto low-income Black neighborhoods today. And, what happens now with evictions and with the housing crisis is that it continues to perpetuate these differences where low-income Black families continue to be relegated to over-policed neighborhoods, high-crime neighborhoods, neighborhoods with poor schools, and generally neighborhoods that do not have the resources of wealthier and predominantly white parts of cities.
And, you know, the saddest part in all this is when folks can pay their rent and they have to deal with informal evictions where they don't want them there. The landlords don't want them there, so they don't fix the place up. They don't make sure it's safe. They don't, take care of the tenants in the property the way that they should in hopes that they leave when they know they don't have anywhere else to go.
Absolutely. One of the women who I interviewed for this article is on Section 8 housing, which is housing for very low income Americans. And only one in four Americans who are even eligible for Section 8 housing receive it. They often spend years on the waiting list after they receive it. And landlords can basically decide whether or not they want to allow Section 8 recipients, whether they want to rent to Section 8 recipients or not. And especially in cities like Los Angeles, where this woman lived, or Washington, D.C., where I live, where rents are skyrocketing incredibly quickly, low-income housing is shrinking, landlords can make quite a bit of money on turnover, so pressuring lower-income tenants out and getting raising the rent and then getting higher-income tenants to come in. And so there are, so many horrific practices where, landlords will refuse to deal with bed bug problems or mold problems or a variety of other housing repairs to basically make the house as uncomfortable as they can, hoping that the tenants will eventually leave. But particularly right now in a pandemic, tenants don't have anywhere to go.
There's nowhere. Nowhere to go, nowhere for them to turn. And they are alone. They are desperate. They are destitute. You know, one of the heartbreaking quotes from your piece in the Lily, we're talking to Abigail Higgins, is with the mother who said, I'm so worried. I can't even sleep at night.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, and I think this is part of why I was drawn to coverage of this issue, but having a place to live and having a roof over your head and knowing that when you wake up in the morning, you can stay in the place where you woke up is such a fundamental sense of security. Someone who I interviewed for another article just talked about how that's the basis of everything. I mean, how can you feel stable enough to provide for your kids or, to be a good partner, to pursue relationships or to think about your dreams or the things that you want to accomplish in life if you just literally don't know if you have anywhere to sleep that night? It's such a staggering thing that in the wealthiest country in the world, we take away from millions of people who live here.
We've talked a lot about how Black women are being adversely affected with these evictions and how our families are in danger. Our churches are closed. We have nowhere to go and no help. Our babies are not even able to lay their heads down, let alone get online and try to go to school. But you also say in your piece that Black women are going to help solve the problem. Girl, what you talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as dismal as the housing crisis in the United States is right now, it is also inspiring the way that activists and community organizers are leading the fight against incredibly powerful corporate interests and wealthy millionaires and billionaires who are profiting off of the housing crisis. And Black women are at the front of many of those fights. of the women who I've interviewed in my article in The Lily, I talk about Jewel Burgess, who lives here in D.C. And is facing threats of eviction. And while she's facing those threats of eviction, she is also organizing with the D.C. Tenants Union, which is an incredible local organization that is fighting evictions and organizing a rent strike. So people are refusing to pay their rent in solidarity with each other. I also interviewed for another article for The Nation, I interviewed Tiana Caldwell, who is a leader with KC Tenants, which is another housing organization. And she helped organize a phone zap to disrupt the online eviction courts that have started happening, because they can't have eviction courts in person, but they are still holding eviction proceedings over Zoom. Moms for Housing is an organization led by Black women in Oakland, and they are reclaiming vacant housing in Oakland because, like so many problems in the United States, it's not that there is not enough housing. There are in cities across the country, there are tons of vacant homes that no one is living in while we're letting people be homeless. And Moms for Housing are, a group of Black women who are organizing, who are leading the fight to reclaim those homes. So there are a lot of inspiring and impressive stories of Black women like fighting against these really powerful people who have a lot more resources. That's the upshot to a difficult
Girl,
story.
Let me tell you something about Black women. We're going to make it happen. Okay? I mean, that is, you are sitting here as a Black woman with your family, and you may not have anywhere to lay your head, but you're going to sit up and start fighting for other women who look like you to try to make things better. It's just only a Black woman. I'm serious, because, girl, look, that's just what we do. That's just how we roll. And I hate that we are not able to come together, because there's strength in numbers. This is a time where our churches, we would lean on our churches. We would just go to the church, and if the church had to open up and let the family sleep in the pew, or, stay in one of the children's ministry rooms, or, one of the church members would take them in, because they would make an announcement during services. Having our churches closed is hurting our community in ways that we cannot even ever imagine.
There is something incredibly dehumanizing about the pandemic, from not being able to organize in community spaces to not being able to hold the hand of a friend or a family member who is experiencing an eviction. It makes concrete organizing and also just comforting really difficult.
What was the one thing in this article that you wanted to tell but couldn't because you ran out of space? What's the one thing you left out that you wish you could have let folks know about?
Oh, man. So many things, but the primary thing that comes to mind is that these evictions are being carried out not by mom and pop, landlords who, own like one small apartment building as their source of family income. These evictions are being carried out by millionaires and billionaires who own, in some cases, thousands of units, and they can afford to forgive rent, and they're not, because they're valuing profit over people's lives. And I think that's a really important message to not get lost in this crisis. The United States has the resources to forgive rent. The United States has the resources to solve this problem, and people are deliberately deciding not to.
Girl, I can't tell you. It's been difficult not to cry talking to you. It was difficult not to cry reading your article because I couldn't help but think about the friends and relatives that I grew up with who experienced this, who lived through this trauma, and who were, permanently affected by it. And so thank you for shining the light on these African-American women, their struggle, their pain, and their perseverance. I appreciate you, Miss Abigail.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing the same. I really appreciate it.
All right. And we're going to keep in touch as you follow up, as you move along with the story. Girl, call me and come on back on the show.
I would love to do that. Thanks so much for getting in touch and for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.